Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the CDSL Limited Q3 FY22 earnings call hosted by Axis Capital Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there'll be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. Please note that CDSL does not provide specific revenue or earnings guidance. Anything said on this call which reflects CDSL's outlook for the future or which could be construed as forward-looking statement must be reviewed in conjunction with the risk that the company faces. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Anshuman Singh. Thank you, and over to you.
Thank you, Mike. Good morning, everyone. On behalf of Axis Capital, a very warm welcome to the Q3 FY22 conference call of CDSL India Limited. We have the management team of CDSL represented by Mr. Nehal Vora, MD and CEO, Mr. Girish Amesara, the CFO, Ms. Naina Ovalekar, Chief Regulatory Officer, Mr. Ram Kumar, Chief of Business Operations, Mr. Vinay Madan, Chief Risk Officer, Mr. Sunil Alvares, MD and CEO, CDSL Ventures, and Mr. Nilesh Kittur, AVP. Without further ado, I would like to hand over the conference to the management for their opening remarks, post which we can open the floor for Q&A. Thank you, and over to you, Nehal, sir.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Anshuman. I would like to wish everybody a good morning, and I would welcome you all to CDSL's third quarter conference call for the financial year 2021-22, and I hope each of you and your loved ones are safe and healthy. I'm joined by the management team of CDSL Group. As in the previous quarters, we've posted a detailed financial presentation on our website for your reference. Our strong performance in the December 2021 quarter is a direct result of deliberate steps we've taken towards strengthening our role in the financial ecosystem, the revised strategy of empowering the registered investors, and providing services that are convenient and easy, enabled us to do more and retain our existing clients. We are happy to report that India has strengthened its overall participation in the Indian securities market as the overall number of registered investors, or as we call it, the Atmanirbhar Niveshak, as on 8 February 2022, was 9.6 crore unique client codes on the stock exchanges, which is a 57% increase from the same time of the previous year. Further, the total number of Demat accounts across both the depositories in India as on January 31, 2022, stood at 8.4 crores, while CDSL enjoys a 70% market share at 5.85 crores. We are harnessing the benefits of a digital innovation and the presence carved out across years, especially in the tier two and tier three cities. We have invented and invested in our business to build a truly diversified organization that performs across market regulations and with a commitment to serving the investors, all market infrastructure institutions, regulators, shareholders, and employees. Speaking further on our business performance during the last three months, the number of new active beneficial owner accounts with CDSL has increased by about 91 lakhs, the comparative number of new beneficial owners for the quarter ending December 31, 2020, was approximately 28 lakhs, and approximately 68 lakhs had increased in the quarter ending September 30, 2021. The number of active companies as on December 31, 2021, was 17,748, which is an 11% year-on-year increase from 15,992. For the same period in comparison, the value of securities in Demat custody increased by 47% to 37 lakh crores at CDSL as on 31 December 2021, from 25 lakh crores as on December 31st, 2020. We continue to provide services in line with transformation and requirements of the current time to promote digital initiatives as promoted by the central government. Further, towards our efforts to make investors self-sufficient, to make informed decisions, the CDSL Investor Protection Fund has conducted 88 investor awareness programs in association with SEBI, other MIIs, and depository participants. Before I hand it over to our CFO, Shri Girish Amasera, I'd just like to say that the growth of the Indian securities market is in an extremely encouraging sign, showing and is expected to show its true potential. I also want to take a brief moment to place our appreciation and gratitude to all our stakeholders, the regulators, depository participants, investors, issuers, and other market participants, as well as the employees, for their constant faith in us. Now, I'll request our CFO, Shri Girish, to take out through our financial performance. Over to you, Girish.
Thank you, Nehal. Good morning, everyone. So, speaking on our financials, we have seen a healthy growth in this quarter with an year-on-year performance with respect to net profit in terms of 55% increase. The total consolidated income for the December 21 quarter has increased by 59.73 crores, which is 58% compared to December 2020 quarter. In absolute value terms, we have achieved 162.93 crores total income compared to 103.29 crores during the previous year same quarter. The consolidated net profit after tax for the December 21 quarter has increased by 29.60 crores, which is 55% growth over previous year same quarter. The absolute amount in value terms, it is 83.63 crores compared to 54.03 crore of previous quarter. On a standalone basis, the total income for the December quarter has increased by 40.30 crore, which is 50% over previous year same quarter. The absolute value is achieved at 121.55 crore compared to 81.25 crore for December 2020 quarter. The standalone net profit after tax for the December 21 quarter has increased by roughly 20.74 crore, which is 48% increase. And in terms of absolute value numbers, the amount is achieved at 63.77 crore during December 21 quarter compared to 43.02 crore for December 2020 quarter. Now I will hand over the dais to Sunil Alvarez to take you through our operations of our wholly owned subsidiary, CDSL Ventures Limited. Over to you, Sunil. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. CDL had a very healthy performance in the last quarter, and on the back of buoyant markets, we had the KYC creation increased by 160% to 111 crores. The KYC fetch in CDL increased by 165% to 2.51 crores. The CKYC business increased by 83% to 15.19 lakh records. In terms of RTAs, we have about 802 companies registered as of 31st December. On the GSP, there was a slight drop in the number of records processed as compared to the previous year. And on the operational income side for the period April to December 2021, we had income of 99.35 crores as against 48.69 crores during the period of April to December The total income, including other income, was 109 crores as compared to 58.92 crores in the same period last year. With regard to expenses, it was at 36 crores this year as compared to 21.17 crores last year. Based on that, the profit before tax was 70.54 crores this year as compared to 37.74 crores last year, which is an increase of about 87%. On the profit after tax, the total profit after tax for this year was 53.60 crores as against 29.33 crores, which is a jump of 83%. With this, I'll hand over the back to Axis Capital to take over the questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on your touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We have the first question from the line of Mr. Prakash Kapadia from A Portfolio Managers. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity. Congrats on a good set of numbers. A couple of questions from my end. You know, I was just trying to understand more from Sunil. He mentioned about, you know, the KYC business doing well. So if I look at 9 months performance of CVL, you know, as per segment, revenues are up 104%. Could you give some more, you know, understanding? Is there some reduction in discounts? Has, you know, pricing improved? Has, you know, contribution of new folios increased as compared to the fetches? And you know, what would be, say, the contribution from newer initiatives? If you could give some more insights, that would be helpful.
Yeah, so far as pricing is concerned, there is pressure on the creation. We currently CVL levies two charges. One is on the creation and one is on the fetch. There has been pressure on the creation charges with the increase in volumes. But the fetch charges have more or less remained the same. And with the increase in volumes of fetch, okay, that is added to the performance of CVL.
Okay.
I hope that answers the question.
So it's the core business of fetch and new records which is driving the growth.
Yeah, it's like records get added at the end of the day at some point or the other, they get fetched. So bottom market, the number of fetches would obviously increase. So that would help, you know, the income grow at that point in time.
Any number of client records or folios you can share?
Yeah, first December we had 3.29 crore KYC records in CVL.
3.2. Understood. That's helpful. Second, you know, if I look at our other expenditure for the 9 months, could, you know, Girish comment on, you know, what heads are we seeing? Because there has been a 77-78% increase in other expenditure ex of, you know, employee and the system maintenance costs. So, because, you know, last year there were some one-offs due to COVID. So, what I'm trying to understand on the OPEX side, rent, business development, repairs, what are, you know, some of these which have seen a higher increase as compared to revenues?
So just to give a color of the expenditure, largely our expenditure are coming through operation related expenditure, employee cost, technology cost, and contribution to investor protection fund, which is an basically regulatory cost. So operation related cost largely covers the inter KRA charge that we are required to pay in CVL. Okay, so that is one of the costs. Then we also have a cost on the SMS charges, that SMS and other alerts that we are supposed to send to the investors. That is one of the major contributors. Rest are our normal contributors. Now, regulatory cost is a function of the operating profit that we achieve. So, higher the operating cost, our charge towards regulatory cost will also increase because it is directly proportionate to our operating income. So, it specifies 5% of our operating income has to be contributed to APF. So, roughly, this is the structure of our expenditure.
Right. And can you just share the breakup of larger revenue streams for the quarter?
Sure, I will do that. I will do that. Please. So, the transaction charge is achieved at 52.70 crore as against 30.95 crore. Our online data charge, which is CVL's income, is contributing 33.62 crore compared to 13.09 crore. I'm giving the comparison of this quarter and December quarter last year.
Yes, absolutely.
IPO corporate action income has contributed 23.41 crore compared to 6.95 crore. And annual issuer charge income is contributing 28.98 crore compared to 21.69 crore. Then we have cash statement charges, which is contributing 4.42 crore compared to 4.44 crore. And see, basically this covers almost 88% to 98% of our operating income. Rest are contributing less than 1% or 1%, which is settlement charges, interest charges, eKYC, CKYC, document storage charges, account maintenance charges. So I'm not repeating those things, but what I told is covering almost 88% to 90% of our operating income.
And what will be the data provisioning number as on date? Would you have that handy?
Debtors provision number, just a moment. We have a provision for the 9 months amounting to 8 crore compared to 7.34 crore during 9 months previous year.
And last quarter we had seen a jump in e-voting. So is that continuing? Do you have that e-voting number?
No, e-voting, basically e-voting this year, the extension was not provided. So whatever income that we had recorded till 6 months, apart from that, we had an income of roughly 95 lakhs in this quarter. So majority income has been covered during, for as far as companies are concerned, those income has been covered in first two quarters. So it is around 6.5 crore on 9 month basis, of which 5 crore was already considered in up to second in the first.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yes. Thank you. I'll join back the queue. I have some more questions. I'll join back.
Thank you.
Participants who wish to ask a question may press star and one on your touchtone telephone. We have the next question from the line of Devansh Nigotia from SIMPL. Please go ahead.
Yeah. So thanks for the opportunity and congratulations on good number. So just wanted to know if you can just elaborate on the investor behavior, especially Jan month when the IPO market was not as active as it was in December quarter and the secondary markets were also weak. But when we look at the month-on-month addition of the accounts, they continue to be really robust. Of around 29-30 lakh absolute addition and 5.5% month-on-month growth. So if you can just throw some soft points, where are these investors heading? Are these for mutual fund investments or for secondary market or IPO market? Just some direction on the customer behavior, if you can just elaborate.
So basically, a DMAT account is, see, for mutual funds, DMAT account is not mandatory, it's optional. And DMAT account is used for secondary markets, for IPOs, it is compulsory. So it has multiple end use cases. Therefore, also there have been news in the market about the LIC IPO. So people in anticipation also would be kind of wanting to open a DMAT account. So that's a mandatory thing to do before you can apply in an IPO. So I think it's a culmination of variety of factors that whilst the overall the market has been kind of range bound, But the participation has gone up both in terms of unique client code or the stock exchanges as well as on the DMAT accounts getting opened on the basically the depository. So I think it's in line with that, and we're having more and more participations coming from tier 2, tier 3 towns, people wanting to able to invest in this the mainstream market. So it will be difficult to point out whether it is IPO driven or it is secondary market driven or mutual fund driven. So mutual fund is not compulsory as of now, it's optional to open a DMAT account.
Okay, okay. So directionally it looks like more from the LIC IPO, that is, directionally that looks like a direction of the addition that is actually happening.
I am not talking only about the LIC IPO. Also the other PSU IPOs, large other IPOs which are expected to hit the market. So people use that. So that is one reason. Second is obviously their participation in the secondary market has also gone up. And DMAT account is a mandatory thing for anybody to participate in the secondary market. So it's a combination of both these factors mainly. And mutual funds, wherever people opt for mutual for the DMAT accounts, that also is kind of a third contributory factor.
And if you can just throw some light on how is this behavior very different from what we have seen historically, when there are connections, participations actually go down, but since you're highlighting in recent months, it has actually increased. So what do you think has caused this change structurally, or it's temporary, or...
So I think the principal driver has been COVID. Most of the, I think, securities market was continuing on without any kind of disruption. And people had their savings, which they could access without physically going to their broker's offices. So the online mode, etc., basically the digital platforms, etc., have contributed to this growth. And it's kind of an end-to-end process, right, from account opening to transactions to placing of orders to the settlement process. It can be done from the comfort of your home. And that's the ease of doing business, is kind of encouraging more and more players, more and more in investors, sorry, to come in into the market.
Okay. Okay. Thanks a lot, sir. That was really helpful. I'll get back in the queue.
Thanks.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Pranav Mehta from ValueQuest. Please go ahead.
Oh, yes, sir. Thanks for the opportunity and congrats on very good results. So, firstly, just wanted to dig more, a little bit more deeper in this question on other expenses that somebody else also asked earlier. So, considering that we are a platform company, we would have thought that, as our volumes expand, our expenses should grow at a much slower pace than our revenue growth. But at least in the last couple of years, as our volumes have really grown, other expenses have also gone up, in sync with our revenue growth. So, a bit confused as to why there is not enough operating leverage in this line item. So if you can just explain a bit more on that front. And secondly, a few weeks back, there was an exchange filing from CDSL that we are divesting our stake in our subsidiary CDSL IFSC Limited. So, just wanted to understand our thought process behind that decision. Why would we divest our stake and give up any potential upside that can come to future developments in GIFT City? Yeah, these are two of my questions. Yeah.
Okay. The first question is that why is there is an opportunity? We are like a financial infrastructure company. And there has to be investment in the technological platforms to ensure that the most sophisticated platforms are put in place. But there are also certain regulatory contribution to IPS, sending the SMSs, which are connected to the number of transactions which are taking place. And that is directly connected with the growth of volumes which has happened. So if you see, the extent of the income growth is not is higher in terms of percentage, is higher than the growth on the expenses, because the expenses comprises of both certain fixed costs as well as certain variable costs which are connected directly to the volumes which I have just explained. Second question about the IFSC. The regulator out there, the IFSCA, says that we should not, there should be a single kind of basically a depository, and there is basically a group form to invest into the entire in ecosystem of the gold and bullion, including basically the depository. So that comprises equal stakes to CDSL, NSDL, BSE, NSE, as well as MCL. And therefore, it was felt that rather than having competition, this group should be holding this entire shareholding of this particular thing. So they only wanted one single kind of depository so that they can compete with the world. And it's not that we are going to lose out, because now we also have exposure into the spot exchange for basically the gold and the clearing corporation. So as a one-fifth stake, we have exposure across the entire kind of ecosystem. And since there is no competition, whatever volume comes will come only to this one kind of entity. So that was the reason.
Sure. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Prayesh Jain from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi sir. Just a couple of questions. Firstly, do you have anything to quantify in terms of, you know, how many accounts can be opened during via the LIC IPO, the policy holder? So some understanding if you have. And secondly, can you give some understanding of with regards to penetration of DMAT accounts across you know, major cities and tier 2, tier 3 cities, as to what is the level of penetration of DMAT accounts? You know, while at a country level, we know it's around 5-6%, but you know, how distinct it is with regards to tier 1, tier 2, tier 3 and beyond that cities? That will be helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, the first question, I can't hear it properly. Could you repeat the first question?
Yeah, so the LIC IPO, wherein, you know, we have some separate allocation for policy holders, and it is expected that quite a few for the DMAT accounts will be opened because of that. Yeah.
So that is a futuristic question. It is difficult for us to assess how many policy holders will actually convert into opening of DMAT accounts. We'll have to only wait and watch as the DRHP gets filed and the issue is launched, but how many actually translate into DMAT account. So I'll not be able to comment on that. As regards tier 2, tier 3, we don't give out these numbers out in the public domain. It's kind of given as a holistic number which has been done. But I can tell you that there is a general trend that there has been a higher participation also as compared to the previous year, in tier 2, tier from tier 2, tier 3, as compared to the previous year.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, welcome.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Mayur Liman from Profit March Security. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Mr. Liman, your voice is not very clear in the call. Could you come closer to the mic?
Okay. Now it's audible?
Yes, this is clear. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. I just want to ask, can you share your thoughts on demand forecast and how do you see quarter four now? That's it from my side.
We don't give any futuristic outlooks, future outlooks, so I'm sorry, I will not able to answer that.
Okay, no issue, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Pawan Kumar from Ratnadia Capital. Please go ahead.
I wanted to just check the IPO income you said for the quarter was around 36 crores, right?
IPO, I said the IPO income was 23. IPO is 23.41 crore in this quarter.
And KYC charges are 36.
33.62 crore.
How much, sir? 23.62.
33.62 crores.
Okay. If I wanted to split this between, say, the fetches versus the new charges, what would that split be broadly?
Normally, the fetches constitute to about 80% of the income.
Okay. And can you just give us an idea of how the charges have been, how the charges have varied for the fetches, maybe on an year-on-year basis?
The fetches, we charge 35 rupees for fetch since inception. That is since 2011. There's no changes since then.
Okay. And for the new ones, how have the charges been varied for over the last year-on-year basis?
Basically, we charge 20 for a new record. And over a period of time, as the volumes have increased, there have been certain volume discounts given to intermediaries.
Okay. So overall, that has come down from 3.20 rupees, is it?
Sorry,
I didn't get that number clearly, sir. How much was it originally?
Our rack rates are 20 rupees for new KYC created, okay? And there are volume discounts given to large players based on the volumes created.
Okay, sir. Fine, sir. Those were my questions. I'll get back in with you.
Thank you. Participants who wish to ask a question may press star and one on your touchtone telephone. Participants who wish to ask a question may press star and one on your touchtone telephone. We have the next question from the line of Prakash Kapadia from Anif Portfolio Managers. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks for the follow-up. We've seen a record, account opening on the DMAT side. So what I was trying to understand, if I look at the IT return data, there are around 6 crore returns filed and, there are already 8.4 DMAT accounts. So is PAN compulsory to open a DMAT account or is Aadhaar enough?
No, PAN is compulsory.
PAN is compulsory. And as a trend, have we seen, same PAN number opening more incremental accounts? Is that the trend or these are, newer DMAT accounts which we witnessed over the last year or two?
No, overall the trend is a newer DMAT accounts getting open, newer people overall.
Okay. And, recently IT department has automated financial transactions to improve compliance. So is it the depository's responsibility to share data to the IT department or is it at the broker end which, they have to report these transactions?
I think this has nothing to do with the financial performance of the company. This is more of a compliance issue. So I think... I don't see the link between the two on this question.
Vinny, I was trying to understand, because we've seen a spurt and increase, government has automated AIS and returns. So does the transaction get reported from our end or is it, the...
Yeah, so it is all the MIIs have to report.
Okay, it's an entire market participants which...
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to get. And lastly, you know, the there has been some newer initiative as an accreditation agency. So any sense on the business model or how will it work or the road ahead?
I'll ask Sunil to answer that.
Yeah, basically we are looking at, you know, a lot of wealth managers getting in their investors to be registered as accredited investors. So we've just started and we just started sending out feelers to the market. And basically, since we cannot make any forward-looking statements, I mean, we are trying to really figure out how it's going to work out.
Okay. So here what we'll target guys who are registered as wealth managers or you know, who are professionals and who can service others. I was just trying to understand the intricacy, not the pricing or...
No, see, we will be working out on a detailed marketing plan, whom to target, etc. Sure, I will not be able to...
Sure, once it's launched...
Discuss out here because it's more a strategy thing for us.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Amit Chandra from HDFC Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, so good morning and thanks for the opportunity. So my question is on the revenue that we earn from a demat account. So roughly if I see the revenue per demat account is around 103 rupees, 105 rupees, and that has been declining over the years. But in the last 2 years, it has been stable at 105 rupees per demat. Okay, but if I see for FY22, it has declined to 95 rupees per demat that we are earning. So is it an indication that the people are opening accounts, but the activity per demat is actually coming down? So that is one thing. If you can throw some light, how do you actually see that trend moving, and what exactly is causing that? And secondly, on the exclusivity that we have with the online brokers, so still we are enjoying that kind of exclusivity, or are we seeing the other the competition also catching up and opening accounts for the online brokers?
Yeah. On the first question, Amit, it's the overall activity, the delivery days percentage has gone up significantly. You see over year on year in the last 2 years on the exchanges, and that has directly got to do with the activity which has been done. So I don't see a reduction in the activity. People may be opening accounts and may not be doing that activity for some of the accounts, so you have taken an absolute number of an average. But I think overall, if you see the core delivery percentages, the core margin pledge percentages, and margin pledge is a new line of business, all this has significantly increased. And that's why the quantum has really gone up over the last 1 or 2 years. And sorry, what was your second question?
Yeah, so second question was on the exclusivity that we have with the online.
So I think that I would not like to comment whether it's exclusive or non-exclusive. The important thing as a company and as a management, we are focused on ensuring the best technology platforms, the ease of doing business, and then leave it to the market to figure out which of the platforms is good for them or not good for them. And just take it from there. Our intent is not to have any kind of exclusivity or non-exclusivity. Our important thing and our focus is to give the best product and to ensure that the platforms continue to remain extremely friendly to the final investor, and then leave it to the market to figure out where they would like to go.
Okay. And sir, the second question is, what is the pledge income that we have generated in this quarter? So, and are we seeing increased activity there? And also, as you mentioned that some part of the other expenses is mostly communication. So, if you can qualify what is the communication charges, because it has been increasing steeply, because everything has to be authenticated by SMS. So, the SMS cost I think has gone up significantly. So, if you can quantify that.
Yeah, I'll ask the CFO Girish to answer that. Can you answer that, Girish?
Mr. Girish has got disconnected. We are trying to reconnect him back again.
Okay. So can you take on the next question and then he can answer once he is connected?
Okay. Okay, sir. Thanks. Hello?
Yeah.
We have Mr. Girish back online.
Yeah.
Hello. So,
Amit, can you repeat your question?
So, I will, I had heard the question. I will answer his question on the pledge income. So, in this quarter, we have earned a pledge income of 4.11 crore. And on 9 months basis, we have earned a pledge income of, margin pledge income of 10.93 crores.
Okay.
And then on the you know, communication charges, how it so whether the increase in the other expenses is you know a function of that or the regulatory expenses or the you know so what is driving that if you can break up that.
Sure. So if in value absolute value terms, our SMS charges is roughly 2.2 crore in the quarter compared to 66 lakhs in the previous year same quarter. And yes, the contribution is slightly increased compared to the previous year same quarter because our operating income has increased. So our contribution to IPF is around 3.84 crore compared to 2.20 crore in previous quarter.
Okay. Okay, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Miraj Shah from Dalal & Broacha Stock Broking Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. I just had one question, sir. Regarding the annual issue charges, the revision in annual issue charges that was supposed to happen, I think, in 2020, which happens every 5 years. Is there any update on when this will take place going ahead? Any update on that?
We'll have to see that because that's a joint proposal which is sent by both the depositories to SEBI, and SEBI will approve it. Post-COVID, yet COVID has not completely weathered out. So we'll kind of see an opportune time and then we'll be sending it. We have been in informal talks, but I think that would not be worthwhile talking about at this stage. We'll see at an appropriate time that would be that.
Okay, so any chances that it could be done in this in the coming financial year?
It will be difficult to answer. It's a futuristic question. We'll have to see, because this is what the SEBI will have to approve, and I cannot really comment on the timelines as to when it will happen.
Okay, understood. And so what would be the factors that SEBI would look at while devising the charges in this?
That will be difficult for me to answer. That SEBI, I cannot second guess what SEBI will look at. But they will look at whatever is the cost and how much increase should be done. So it will be difficult to comment on this also.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time.
Okay.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Paresh from Club Billionaire. Please go ahead.
Hi, Neil. Congratulations to you and your team for a fantastic performance yet again. We pray for your safety and good health. A couple of questions, Neil. One is on the insurance repository. With the LIC IPO likely to happen, and the regulators earlier mentioning before the pandemic that they would kind of review the process of, you know, having e-insurance accounts post-pandemic. Any update or any catalyst in terms of kind of get traction on the insurance e-insurance accounts?
It remains voluntary. It's not yet made mandatory.
Okay.
It is made mandatory, you know, that's the time when the traction will take place. However, we'll have to wait and watch in terms of how the entire space gets done, or what would be the forward part of IRDA in terms of how they would be taking this forward. But as of now, what remains is it's on a voluntary basis.
Okay, fair enough. And the similar line on the commodity repository, right? We currently only have basically only the agri warehousing receipts on electronic mode. Any progress as far as the non-agri is concerned? I mean, again, what would be the catalyst for this to eventually happen? Any talks or any progress on that?
There have been certain policy decisions that all warehouses will now have to be basically done with the commodities repository. They have to be basically be registered. And I think basically the WDRA also is looking at expanding the scope beyond the agri. But that is again futuristic. We'll have to wait and watch as and when it happens, when the agri is also extended to basically the non-agri.
Okay. And then finally, this was regarding the National Academic the project that we had, right, which we had to kind of shelve it and which we are trying to kind of start all over again. So how has that been progressing, given that, you know, now the pandemic seems to be easing out and schools are basically reopening? Any progress or any update on that as well, Nehal?
Sunil, if you can answer that.
Yeah, so as far as the academic depository project was concerned, the MHRD had appointed DigiLocker after our contract expired. And we were opting this service as a private service provider. But because of the pandemic, both most of the universities, etc., have been open. So for it has been difficult to add numbers really on that particular product.
Okay. That's it from my side. And thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Alok Shah from MNCL Group. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity and congratulations on great set of number, Mayor Serenity. I had a few questions, more to do with trying to understand. When I look at number of live companies, which is now at close to 70,700 odd, and try and map that to the annual issuer charges, the growth numbers and so-called ratio of income per corporate seems to have gone a bit higher. Is there, I'm reading too much into it, or we are able to get an increased issuer charges?
No, the issuer charges is constant, but it is depends on the participation and number of folios also. So as the participation goes up, the folios also will go up in these in the overall space of listed company, and accordingly
right.
The issuer charges is connected to that. The charges have not been changed.
Yeah, so it's basically the number of folios which has gone up.
Yeah,
and additionally, to the corporates which are part which are sitting into our IPO also get added into this bucket of 17,748.
Yeah, these are the basically the total number. I'll ask the CFO Girish to answer that. But as per my understanding, this is the total set. Both listed
yeah,
and
yes. So, okay. That's my first question. Girish, I'll have a quick check with you. You spoke about cumulative data closing at close to 8 crores, YTD.
Okay.
No, I'm just trying to validate. Is that the right number?
For 9 months or for December quarter, you said?
I'm okay with anything. 9 months, I think you said 80 crores.
Okay. 9 months provision was 8.19 crores in the current financial year and 7.34 in the previous financial year, 9 months.
7.34. Okay.
7.34 crores.
Sure. And a quick check here is trying to understand the standalone numbers. And
quarter after quarter, we're seeing significant improvement in the EBITDA margin profile there. And this also translates into improvement in margin profile on a consolidated basis. I mean, how do we look at these numbers? Is it that the other subsidiaries are there, there is still a scope of further ramp up, or we need to really look into subsidiary-wise businesses?
No, there is also an operating efficiency angle, which I had mentioned earlier in one of the questions, that there is certain variable cost, but there is also fixed cost, where brings in an operating efficiency. So that cumulatively contributes to the improvement in basically the EBITDA margins as we move forward.
Sure, okay. That helps. Yeah,
I'm done with my question. Mr. Shah, sorry to interrupt. Request you to kindly join the queue back again as we have other participants also.
I'm done with my question. Thank you.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Mr. Mehul Pathak, who is an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. Congratulations on a good set of numbers. Over the last 2-3 years, we have started generating large amount of cash. And the company's policy today is to distribute that cash through final dividend at the end of the year. And the money comes to us once a year, and that to next year in August, September. Now, if you see good companies, they try to keep only that much amount of cash that generates future growth and keep some amount of contingency funds. Now, what is our driving philosophy in terms of how much cash you should retain? Question number one. Question number two, what exactly is the policy in terms of interim dividends? And three, I have noticed that companies that are growing and distribute dividends and thereby increase their return on capital ratios are generally rewarded by the market a lot better than companies that retain cash and earn single-digit returns. These are my three questions, sir. So
first of all, we have a overall dividend policy. About 60% of the operating profits get distributed as dividend. We are a financial infrastructure company, so the strength of the balance sheet is extremely critical as we take on very large projects also. And as the number of demat accounts grow, there are certain of the institutions which want to keep, so they look at the financial strength of the company. And the minimum regulatory capital is 100 crores. So we need to have a significant healthy multiple of that so that the company is seen to be extremely financially strong to weather any such conditions. That's number one. Number two, there are new asset classes which are coming in which require kind of investment, be it the spot goals that SEBI is planning to has issued the circular and it should be operationalized. And also basically the IFSC space where we will be continue to invest there to increase our number of basically the streams of basically the revenue. Third is it is also critical. So your third question was the policy on interim dividend. There is no policy on interim dividend. There is a policy on the total dividend. The dividend should be kind of declared at about 60% of the operating profit. And the important thing is that we have a set kind of standard operating procedure, so it becomes predictable, and a person will be able to kind of assess how much should be the dividend as we go forward. Once we reach a significant portion of our financial strength, balance sheet size, then we will see how whether this number needs to be further increase or decrease as the case may.
Thank you, sir. I'm not entirely convinced with your answer because I think you have more cash than what you need for all the needs that you have raised. So
how would you say? Yeah, okay. We will take your feedback on the call,
Mr. Bhatter. We will move on to the next question as we have other participants also in line.
Yeah, sure. Thank you.
We have the next question from the line of Pratik, who is an individual shareholder. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Congratulations, team, for a great set of numbers. I have two questions. The first one is, in this quarter, the other income part was showing some kind of a dip compared to the last quarter. So any reason behind this drop? And the second question regarding, sir, if you can throw some lights on, like, what are the new revenue streams which might boost the top line growth in next couple of quarters? So, yeah.
So I'll take the second question first, and I'll ask the CFO Girish to answer the first question. Future revenue streams is something which is again a futuristic answer, so we'll be able to it'll be difficult for me to give you that specific answer. But we are basically in a space where basically the regulator, whatever it kind of approves as a product in the securities market and which is linked to basically the depository, it becomes a kind of a source of healthy revenue. So as and when the changes happen in the regulations, we'll see how the new revenue streams will come. So it'll be difficult for me to give you a specific answer on this. The first question asked here from Kirish to answer.
Sure. So basically our other income consists of investment income and other income of, irregular nature. Now in other income, in the last quarter, in September quarter, we had an income which was recorded one-time income around 2.5 crores, so which is not there in December quarter. And in with respect to investment income, our investments are largely made in fixed deposits and debt scheme of mutual funds. So basically, the reduction which you see on a quarter-to-quarter basis is due to the mark-to-market valuation of mutual fund based on the NAV.
Thank you. As there are no further questions, I would now like to hand over the call to the management for closing comments.
So I'd like to wish all of you a very safe and secure time. Take care during these unprecedented times. And thank you all for your questions. Wish you all the very best. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of Axis Capital Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your line.